From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
During the next hour, we will explore the tough issues facing this state. Tonight, we hear from the candidates for governor.
My opponent, Mr. Pritzker, wants higher taxes and more power to Mike Madigan. That will drive employers out of this state and make our problems worse.
Lower taxes to grow our economy.
Cut mental health services, when you cut substance abuse treatment, that is what helps to increase violence on the streets. And you don't understand that. You know, people who want to get jobs want to get trained, and you cut funding for people who would get skills training. I mean, I think you've got it all backward, Governor.
Mr. Pritzker, you know, it's easy for you to sit on the sidelines and criticize when you haven't done an honest day's work in your life.
Mr. Pritzker,
you are not addressing the core issues that we need to fix. Pension reform, job creation, corruption.
And when are you going to get around
those
to that, Governor? You've been the governor for 4 years.
This
is a speech.
Are not dealing
this
with
is something a governor who's somebody who's
your
running.
Your solutions will make things worse.
What have you been doing for the last 4 years?
What my opponents are demonstrating is their lack of concern or respect for their opponents over here. They're pretending as though we do not exist. I spent $25,000. You two gentlemen spent, what, $200 million to get on this stage? Who's the fiscally minded guy? I'm spending less than $1,000. Per percent in the poll, you guys are spending $400,000.
All four candidates for governor met for the first of three debates this week. We're going to talk about that and pretty much mostly that this week on State Week, where you don't have to pay anything to listen to us. I'm Brian Mackey. Sean Crawford is away. Joining us, as always, from the studios of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS and a longtime State House reporter and observer. With me in the Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau is Doug Finke of the State Journal Register. Doug, thanks for coming back on the program.
Glad to be here.
And on the line is Rick Pearson, political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Rick, welcome back to State Week.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, Rick, I'm going to start with you. We've been waiting for this for months. Television viewers have been barraged with 30-second ads of Pritzker and Rauner attacking each other in sometimes vicious terms. But now we really finally had the chance to really get into policy and a substantive discussion of the issues in Illinois government. Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, is that what we saw on Thursday night in the first gubernatorial debate?
Well, we had the opportunity for a substantive policies discussion, but no, that's not what we got. I mean, to me, this was just kind of carrying over those millions of dollars in 30-second ads and just doing it in a live format on stage. The talking points were the same. The Browner attempts to link Pritzker to Madigan and corruption. The Pritzker line that Browner's been a failure. I mean, it was more amped up in a real-time situation. I don't know that it really furthered any kind of discussion about the real critical issues that are facing the state.
Doug Finke, how about you? Do you similar take there? Do you feel more informed about the governor's race?
No, frankly. I mean, when they did talk about substantive issues, it was basically rehashing points that they had made before. The major takeaway I had of this is if you are looking for a certain temperament in a governor, I don't think you saw that in any of these people last night, and it was unfortunate because that, again, was the focus of the candidates and consequently much of the coverage from that is the constant sniping that went on between the four gentlemen.
Yeah, and I feel a little bit about choosing some of that sniping for when I cut the tape for the beginning of this show, but there wasn't a whole heck of a lot of other substantive things to talk about. Charlie, can you give us some perspective? I mean, is this what we're used to hearing in governor's debates in Illinois?
Well, you know what my first reaction was at the end of the debate? Man, I wish Carol were running for governor. She was the moderator, of course.
Right, Carol Marine of NBC in Chicago.
But like Rick said, there was no real getting into the substance. You know, Rauner is corruption Madigan, He doesn't have the kind of accomplishments that governors in the past had when they sought re-election, and he's way down in the polls, and he's very unpopular. So I guess the strategy is you try and make your opponent even more unpopular than you are. And JB talks a good game, but he does not present the details. And I can understand why. Rauner says that he wants to put a device in your car to track how far you drive. That is not true. What Pritzker said to the Daily Herald was, we need to look at how we're going to pay for our roads. And one thing that needs to be looked at is the possibility of charging a tax based on mileage driven. Now, in a way, we do that already because the gasoline tax is so much per gallon. If you drive more, you pay more. But in this day and age, the changing technology, we have cars that don't use gasoline or that use very little. And so in a sense, those riders are getting a partial freebie, or those drivers, they're getting a partial freebie. And so we have to look at that, but we have to do it rationally, and we can't be jumping all over someone who suggests it. Because anybody who wants to be realistic about the state has to acknowledge we need more revenue and we have to reduce spending. And the easy target that people cite is, oh, let's just cut pension benefits. Well, the Supreme Court has made pretty clear that what the Constitution says in plain English means what it says in plain English. You can't cut benefits of people who are already in the system. And so I saw, as Rick said, it's a chance to see live and in person the same garbage that's been spewing out online, on the air, over the radio in these canned ads.
Well, Rick Pearson, I mean, does this sort of thing move voters? I mean, you've been watching Illinois politics for a long time. Do they do this because it works? I mean, I got to say, it felt pretty unusual to me to see people so angry on a stage at each other. And you could just feel the contempt, particularly from Governor Rauner, towards both State Senator Sam McCann and J.B. Pritzker. I mean, what do you think, Rick? Is this an effective strategy for him?
Well, you know, I don't understand necessarily why it's all of this anger going on, because the ads do that. And if people are now, you know, starting to tune into the campaign, I don't know that anybody on stage came off as a likable person that's running for governor. I mean, I kind of understand. I mean, think about the dynamics. 4 years ago, you had Bruce Rauner, who never held public office, had no kind of public record, was a blank slate, basically, candidate that everybody could put their hopes and aspirations on. And you had Pat Quinn with a lengthy record in government. And so it was easy for Rauner to be able to constantly attack various parts of Quinn's record. Then, you know, flash forward to 4 years ago, now Rauner has a record. First time he's ever had a record in public office. And it really provided an opportunity for not only Pritzker to go after him, but also Sam McCann in particular to go after him. And it's kind of a different dynamic there that found, I think, Rauner very much not used to, not accustomed to those kinds of confrontational direct attacks and responding in kind.
And if I could just add, for people who may not be familiar, at least with the history of the governor and Sam McCann, that goes back beyond just this year. McCann voted in favor of a bill that would have brought the AFSCME contract negotiations to some kind of resolution. The governor opposed that bill. That set off a chain of events that then the following election, an opponent was put up against McCann in the primary. McCann won, but those two have been at odds with each other for some time. And it was obvious last night that McCann was trying to get under Rauner's skin, and he did at a certain point in the debate.
Did I hear correctly? Did McCann say that the governor is a liar and a thief?
Correct.
Where does the thief part come from, I wonder? I mean, the liar has been documented, but I've never heard anyone suggest that the governor was a thief.
No, that,
yeah,
that
I don't
was
know.
New rhetoric there.
Yeah.
But yes, he did raise that. And you know, obviously you have McCann trying to exploit the divisions that we saw in the social conservative Republican base when Jeanne Ives almost upset Rauner in the primary. And, you know, this, I think, you know, this was a chance for McCann to appear on a big stage because, yeah, he's getting some money from the operating engineers, but he hasn't, you know, really shown up in any visible way as far as anybody in Chicago knowing him.
Yeah,
and not just Chicago, Rick. I mean, we know who he is because he's a local figure here in Central Illinois. But I get press releases, hourly practically, from the Pritzker and Rauner campaigns. I get them every few days from the Libertarian campaign. I can't even get Senator McCann to respond to my text messages half the time, you know, if I'm asking him a question about something. So I think Rich Miller, who runs the Capital Facts blog, observed this morning that McCann had one job to do in this campaign, and that was to show up on that debate stage last night and deliver zingers to Governor Rauner. And I think the governor's analysis was probably fairly accurate that McCann is, you know, this guy who was put up there by the labor unions in order to take votes away. I'm not sure whether that serves him or helps, you know, educate conservative voters or helps him, you know, win over the 48% or so of conservative voters who voted for State Representative Jeanne Ives instead of him in the primary. That's something that remains to be seen. Turning now to the, you know, there were a few points, though. We talked about, you know, there was a lot of negativity back and forth, but there were a few points where substance, you know, tried to get in. We talked a little bit about in taxes. I noticed that Cass Jackson actually said that he had this his tax proposal is no taxes. You shouldn't have to pay state taxes if you're below the poverty level. State Senator Sam McCann said he was going to solve the state's budget problems through zero-base budgeting. Charlie, you've been following fiscal matters for a long time. Did any of these policies strike you as or really anything else in the sort of fiscal realm of solving the state government's financial problems? Did anything strike you out of last night?
I haven't had the time to do an analysis, but I wondered when Cass Jackson said that, I wonder how many people at the poverty level actually do pay state income taxes.
Because of the earned income tax credit?
Because
of the earned income tax credit,
and because of the exemptions, the personal exemptions. And I thought the idea of zero-based budgeting, that's been around for a long time. Dan Walker proposed that. And how long ago was that? 40-some years, right? And the idea is that you start from scratch. Well, in reality, you can't really start from scratch. You have a prison system. You're going to have to pay for the prison system. You have certain obligations like bonds that you've sold. You have to pay for them. So what you do is you look at what's there, and rather than starting from scratch, you look at what kind of minor cuts, because we're not going to eliminate the prison system, and you look at what kind of improvements we can make to try and reduce our costs. But the idea of starting from zero and working up, I don't think that's realistic, and I don't think it's very practical either.
Well, Charlie, we saw zero-based budgeting. That was the 2-year budget impact.
Yeah. Yeah, and look what that did to us.
Yeah. Rick, I wanted to ask you, so we talked a little bit about what Governor Rauner's strategy was, which is to denigrate his opponents at every opportunity, and so this sort of contemptuous posture he was taking. At one point, he sneered at Pritzker's quote inherited wealth, differentiated from the wealth that he earned as the head of one of the heads of a private equity company. He called him quote deceitful, and at one point he even said quote shame on you, Mr. Pritzker, shame on you, referring to his being captured on some tapes that actually the Tribune reported on last year at this point, where he was heard discussing job opportunities, state job opportunities, with former governor or then governor Rod Blagojevich. Rick, what was Pritzker's strategy? What was he trying to do, trying to show the people of Illinois about Governor Rauner?
Well, it's been a constant theme that Bruce Rauner is a failure. And obviously that's the whole premise of the Pritzker campaign. But going after kind of specifics of pointing out, you know, what have you done to the mental health system? What have you done to solve the state's problems, to make Illinois a better place to live? Some of that, you know, came up in the issues that when the candidates were asked about the out-migration from the state, and Pritzker talked about how higher education was devastated during the budget impasse and students' mass migration out of Illinois, most of them never coming back, and some of them taking their parents with them. I mean, that is what we're going to hear from all the way to the end here are, you know, taking the record of Bruce Rauner and basically saying, here's the problem, what was the result? Here's the problem, what was the result? And that's, as I said, that's a new position that Rauner finds himself in, because now he does have a record that he has to answer for. And whether Rauner keeps saying, well, these are things that Mike Madigan, you know, we're going to, you know, they're all Madigan's fault because he blocked me on every turn. Well, I'm not so sure that, you know, we've heard that routine so many times. I'm not sure that continues to carry over and carry any resonance. I think Rauner's hoping it does as more voters start tuning in, but it's basically been a four-year message that we've heard from Bruce Rauner, and I'm not sure that there are that many new people out there that need any convincing of what that message is.
And I'm not sure how effective that type of message would be, because if you boil it down, it says, well, I've been here 4 years, and I couldn't get my stuff done because of Mike Madigan. Give me another 4 years, and I'll get it done.
Well, and remember,
what kind of confidence is that?
And remember as well that Carol Marine asked the governor about his famous statement that I'm not in charge. And Rauner's response at that time previously when he said that was, you know who's in charge, referring to Mike Madigan. Last night, you know, she directly asked him, are you in charge? He didn't answer the question.
Yeah, and as I've said on this program before, in his mind, he's not in charge the way that he was used to being in charge before he came into basically a position that has to deal with equal partners. When he was head of his firm, he did not have to consult with a whole lot of people. He could give an order and it would be carried out. He was in charge. He's the governor. He can control his agencies within the parameters of the law and the rules and court decisions and so on, but he can't tell the General Assembly, do this. He can't tell the General Assembly, let's do away with collective bargaining for school districts to lower property taxes. He can ask, and if he's politically skillful, he can negotiate and work with legislative leaders, as the Republican governors that I've covered and watched from Dick Ogilvie on were able to do. But he doesn't seem to, well, I guess the apology he made the other day, it kind of acknowledged, you know, I've got to learn how to do this job.
But even with that apology, the mea culpa, you know, that was supposed to be kind of a rebooting of this campaign, as we've noted how the governor is down in independent polls. But even with that so-called reboot, you didn't hear any of that during the debate last night.
Oh, no.
You didn't hear him acknowledge, you know, I've listened, I've learned, whatever, here's why I deserve re-election. It was all basically elect me because I'm going to save you from whatever J.B. Pritzker may bring in.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's actually had not occurred to me previously. But boy, we didn't hear any of that reset talk. You know, the so-called reset, the so-called apology speech from a week ago. We didn't hear any of that really manifest itself in the debate, in attitude or in, you know, in rhetoric.
No, well, none at all. And you know, I thought with the reboot speech that was going to signal kind of a new messaging for the Rauner camp as it, you know, closes out these final weeks. But no, that didn't happen. It didn't exist.
Well, Charlie, I wonder what this we've had negative campaigns in Illinois. I mean, the last campaign 4 years ago between Governor Rauner and then Governor Quinn was pretty negative at times. But this feels, perhaps it's because of the amount of money, the relentlessness of the television advertising. This feels like an order of magnitude greater. What one of these guys, presumably, unless Jackson or McCann catches fire in a way that would be unprecedented, one of these guys is going to be the governor next year. What is this sort of negativity and this, you know, liar and deceitful back and forth? They're going to come in with these reputations. Do, you know, what do you think this means for the future and their ability to govern Illinois, Charlie?
And that's a good question, and I don't really have an answer, but it occurs to me the fact of the matter is Rauner is not going to have a Republican-controlled General Assembly. He talks about the changes that are made, for example, in public employee union regulation in places like Indiana and Wisconsin, then Governor Mitch Daniels in Indiana, Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin. What he doesn't mention, and which I think is very critical, is that the Republicans controlled the legislature in both of those states. So they were able to put through a Republican pro-business anti-union agenda. Unfortunately for the governor, that's not the case in Illinois. There are Democratic majorities in the House and the Senate. There will be a Democratic majority in the Senate when the 101st General Assembly is sworn in January, because there aren't enough Republicans running for Senate seats. If all were elected, they still wouldn't have 30. So it seems to me that the practical thing would be to sit down and say, okay, I'm not going to be able to get everything. Why don't I look at stuff that might be really important? He talks about term limits. That's really popular. Like 80% of the people think it's great. You look at the specifics, and it wouldn't kick in for like 10 more years. And so how does that deal with our problems of today? You've got to figure out what's doable and move from the rhetoric and sit down with the other parties involved, negotiate something to move the state forward. And as it makes it a lot harder when you accuse the other party of being corrupt and being a crook and all this nasty rhetoric. But I guess in a way that reflects the national mood, and the stuff that happened in Washington has now seeped down to Illinois.
You know, I talked to House Republican leader Jim Durkin recently about electing candidates and with his Republican candidates, and certainly by the money that Governor Rauner has put into the House Republican operation, that looks like he's putting all his eggs in one basket about electing House Republicans to try to further deteriorate Mike Madigan's majority. But I asked him, you know, how dependent is the success of your legislative candidates on the success of Bruce Rauner? And that was really a question he couldn't answer. You know, he tried to say, well, all races are individual races, those kinds of things. But to me, that also showed a sense of concern of Rauner's job approval and popularity and how that could hurt potentially Republicans down ballot.
His coattails. And that's actually, Rick, a great transition point, because one of those House Republican candidates where the Republicans are hoping to defend a seat is the one currently held by Representative Jerry Long of Streeter. And Rick, I'm wondering if you can, last week when we talked about him on the show, the House Republicans had cut him off from support, both on the staff side and on the political campaign operation side. He had denied he was being accused of harassment. He had denied that there was any sexual harassment element to it, but there were some additional developments and a changing story this week. Rick?
Yeah, he's a Republican from Streeter. That was a very hard-fought district. It's always one of the top House races, very, very split district. After initially blaming it on what he called as the House Republicans under Durkin trying to have him deliver kind of a moderate message, and that's why they cut him off. He did acknowledge that a Republican campaign staffer was feeling that she apparently thought she was having a migraine and that he rubbed her neck. And subsequent to that, internal investigation by the House Republicans, and that's when they decided to cut it off. they've decided that, you know, no more money goes into his operation. But it's very interesting. It seems that some of the local Republican organizations are still standing by him.
Yeah, and even not just Republican leadership, but some individual Republican legislators have called for him to step down from both the campaign and the and his seat in the legislature.
And, you know, I mean, let's obviously look at the atmosphere that we're in here. And it's because of the problems Mike Madigan has faced both in his governmental operation and his Democratic Party operation over issues surrounding Me Too. And there's no doubt that, you know, in some respects that Republicans kind of saw this as another check mark for people to say, this is why you can't support or be with Mike Madigan. Now, you know, with the recent resignation of one legislator, and then you have this defiant State Representative Jerry Long as a Republican, if there was any thoughts of using Me Too as a political weapon, I think those have evaporated.
All right, and Doug Finke, a harsh transition, but we're running out of time in the show. I also wanted, there was a Fourth District Appellate Court order this week in the ongoing legal fight over House Bill 40. This was the bill that allowed public funding of abortions for people on the Medicaid program, as well as people on state health insurance. What did the Fourth District Appellate Court do this week?
The Fourth District Appellate Court upheld a lower court decision that basically dismissed the case. It also reiterated that one aspect of the challenge to this law, which involves this convoluted thing about the state setting a revenue estimate and then using that as a basis for a budget, was a political issue that the courts should not get involved with. But this is not the last we're going to hear of this. The pro-life groups that brought the suit in the first place said they are going to appeal to the state Supreme Court. So this is a ways away from being resolved.
I the one thing that really jumped out at me about this was the way, this is getting really in the weeds of the legal minutiae here, but the Fourth District Appellate Court didn't even issue a precedential opinion. They issued what's called a Rule 23 order, which is where a decision is so routine and not, you know, not controversial or anything, that they just feel, and so in keeping with past law, that they just kind of do an offhand order. And that's the type of order they used in this case, just showing that this is really about getting this case before the Supreme Court for the anti-abortion activists who are pushing it. Time now for notes from the field. Just briefly, Rick Pearson.
Very quickly, obviously the growing Chicago mayoral field, more than 15 candidates. We haven't seen the last of them, and even though Gary Chico is right now the lone Latino candidate, expect to see at least one, if not two, more Latino candidates for mayor.
And here we thought that the governor's race was the only race worth talking about in Illinois. That is, unfortunately, that's our time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Doug Finke of the State Journal Register in Springfield, and Rick Pearson, political writer for the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.